welcome to the Defining Time Show. It's episode number 30 on Fifth Wrist Radio. Can't believe we're at 30 already, but it's very exciting. I'm joined by a couple of gentlemen today. First one is Vinny from Tell Your Time. He's one of our newest co-hosts. So welcome, Vinny. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I've just been promoted. Feels great. So yeah, happy to be part of the project.
Promotion. That's very good. How much are you getting paid?
Not enough, it would seem. I can get paid in watches if that's okay. We'll work out the details later.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. And joining our third guest today is JP. How are you, mate?
Very good. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. And I've ever since starting this, and honestly, I've wanted to get you on to talk to you since I started the podcast. So very excited to have you here today. And we've got some action-packed stuff to talk about. So before we do that, let's do some wrist checks and some drink checks. So we'll start with our extra special guest. Sorry, Vinny, but we'll start with JP. So JP, what's on your wrist and what are you drinking?
Yes. So today I'm wearing my Vacheron Constantin Overseas. That's the 4500V. People who know me know that I've been wearing this ever since I got it, really, a couple of months ago. It's been possibly the watch I've worn the most ever since then, just because it's a very special piece to me, a true grail watch, really, for me. So, yeah, rocking that today. And in terms of drinks, I'm a rum drinker. So today I have a nice glass of Ron Zacapa Centenario. It's a 23-year-old rum from Guatemala. If you're not into rums and you want to get started, this is the one for you. So highly recommended.
Mm. Sounds good. I'm not into rums and I'm actually learning something. So there you go.
Awesome.
Very good. Vinny, what about yourself?
So that was a very classy opening start, JP.
Mm, me. Thank you.
I've drink check first, Black Label with Coke, stock standard. And wrist check is the latest acquisition of mine, is the King Seiko 4402. Mm. My first sort of vintage piece that I've planned to own for a while. Loving it so far. And yeah, just can't get enough of it. Honeymoon period is going very well.
Such a beautiful piece, Vinny.
Thank you.
Yeah, you did very well with that. Awesome. And in the spirit of what the conversation is going to be today, and I'll talk about that in a little minute, I am wearing my Rolex BLNR, which I've been wearing quite a bit lately and really, really enjoying it. And my drink is a Old Faithful Pure Blonde beer, one of my favorites. So let's get into it. We've got a couple of things to talk about today, and this will be part one of two parts that we're going to do with JP. First of all, we're going to be, you know, introducing JP, having a bit of a chat to him, maybe some watch stories, a little bit about his collecting and tastes and things and how things have changed over time. And then we are going to go into an epic battle. And the epic battle is to sell or not to sell. JP had a BLNR that he sold. I have a BLNR that I kept. We're going to go through the different motions potentially of what goes through each person's head as they're thinking of doing something. And I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a very interesting topic. And before I continue on, I just want to say a big shout out and congratulations to our good friend Dale, who has just dropped his first review on YouTube. So Mr. Ace K Productions, if you want to go check that out, you can find him on Instagram, you can find him on YouTube. But congratulations, great, great first review. What did you guys think?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was fantastic. Dale's absolute wizard with the camera. Yeah. And to take it from just photography to videography and then mash it all together and what is a really fun, energetic review. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Definitely go check it out. Five minutes of your time, and yeah, amazing.
Sorry,
you go, JP, go.
Couldn't agree more with what you guys said. Dale is such a legend, and if you've seen his Instagram account, you know that he's, as Vinny says, a real wizard with a camera, and his video work just takes it to the next level. He sent us some snippets through to our little Instagram chat that we have going on, and you could already see it's going to be good, but the work he does there is really, really extraordinary, so go check it out.
Yeah, for sure. I really liked his honesty. And, you know, he talked about the flaws of the watch, but what I did like about it is his passion and his love for his watch, because it is his watch, came through in the fact that the flaws didn't outweigh the magnitude of positives that that watch has, which was really cool and refreshing to hear. All right, so let's get into JP. So give us a little bit about, you know, sort of your background in watches and where it all started. How did it all begin?
Yeah, sure. So for guys who don't know me, my name's JP. I'm the guy behind JP_Melps, the Instagram account. I'm originally from Germany. I've been living in Melbourne here in Australia for 5 years now. When it comes to my love for watches, I think I've always had like an interest in watches, but for the most part, it was rather superficial. I think it started off with a Swatch that I got from my godfather at like age 6. Remember it distinctly, it was a blue dial and a pink strap, and my mother actually had to cut down the strap so I could wear it on my tiny wrist. And also a fun fact about that, my godfather, he was a lefty, so he was left-handed, so he wore his watch on the right hand, on his right wrist. And that's the first time I had ever seen, you know, consciously as somebody wearing a wristwatch, and I just thought, okay, this is where the wristwatch goes, on the right wrist. So I still wear my watches on my right hand despite the fact that I'm not left-handed. From there, I got a really nice Certina for my first communion. I had a couple of Casios in my teens. I had an Oakley digital watch I absolutely loved. I'm not sure if any of you guys know the brand TW Steel, but that was something I had back in the day, an absolute monster. I think it was like 48 millimeters or something.
The current day equivalent is Nixon.
Yeah, exactly.
If anyone wants to have a look, 50 mil Nixon, that is the modern day equivalent and the millennial special.
Exactly. So it was pretty bad. And I think in 2011, it was when I got my first like proper luxury watch, which was a Tag Heuer Link. Back then, I didn't really know a lot about watches. I just liked the look and the brand. And that was my only watch for about 3 or 4 years. It was a chronograph, but I never really used it because I had no idea it was actually a chronograph. Moving on from there, I got married in 2014, and my wife and I went to a honeymoon, and one of the cities we went to was New York City, and I wanted to like mark that occasion, like getting married and getting a nice watch. So what we did was we went into the Wempe boutique on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan.
Wow.
And actually, my wife was the one who saw a watch that I later then purchased, which is the Breitling Transocean 1461, which I think you guys have seen. It's the semi-perpetual calendar chronograph and still one of my favorite watches. And at that time, again, I didn't really know much about watches, but I knew that I loved how that thing looked. And it was a lot of money for me back then, still is a lot of money. And I walked into the boutique 3 or 4 times until I could bring myself to actually pulling the trigger on it. And my wife said, okay, let's just do it. I'm not going to go in there another time. And with you not buying that watch, this is silly. So that's what I did. And I remember the salesman talking to me about the brand and like how complicated it was. And again, back then, I had no idea what he was talking about. I was just nodding, yeah, sure, and in the back of my head thinking, what the hell is he talking about? So, grew to learn that piece even more over time when I learned about, you know, what is really going on within that wristwatch. A couple of months later, I moved to Melbourne. My wife was already here, so I joined her here in Australia, and I got a job in sales. And I discovered an Omega Planet Ocean, the Good Planet Edition, the GMT one that I really liked. And I had a really good month in the sales job I was in a couple of months down the road, and pulled the trigger on that one. I just loved the way it looked. I remember like looking at it every day on my computer screen and saying, okay, this is the one I'm going to get very, very soon. And I think this is where it all started with, you know, reading articles about watches, watching YouTube videos, getting into the forums and stuff like that. So I think that's where it really, you know, that's where it all started going down the rabbit hole for me. And I think the whole Instagram thing started very late for me. It was in early 2018. And through that, I got in touch with some people in the community, like you guys, went to a couple of Red Bar events, kind of organized our own group over the last year or so with Anthony Du as well. And yeah, that's basically my journey. I gotta say, up until I found like this little group here, you guys and all the other ones here in Melbourne, I really struggled to, you know, find friends here, because, you know, you move countries, you don't really know where to go in order to like make friends and stuff like that. So through that, I really found my people. It's tough to describe, but I think everybody who's in this community, not even this one, but you know, could be any other watch community all over the world, it's just a very interesting type of people, and it's a very tight community. And I'm so glad that I'm in a position now where I could, you know, join you guys and be part of this amazing group.
Yeah, it's so true. And even for me, I lived in Melbourne for 4 years, and you know, I've only got a couple of friends in Melbourne that are outside of the watch world, and the rest are all in Melbourne. So it's a testament to the group of people that can connect over these silly little things that we put on our wrists.
Absolutely.
But yeah, no, that's very cool. I think, you know, there's so many people listening to this that would have started in such a very similar way, where you end up, that first mechanical watch is a Tag Heuer of some sort, because, and I think to them, it's a testament to their marketing and the way that they do things and are connected with all sorts of sports and people that we look up to and aspire to be like in racing car drivers and the like. But they do a really good job at that. And it is the gateway. I know it was for you. Is that true?
Absolutely. It was. Again, I didn't really know much about other brands, but I knew Tag Heuer for some reason. And I agree. Tag gets a lot of hate these days, which is undeserved in my opinion. I think they make a really decent watch. I think they got really good designs. Obviously, amazing heritage with the whole Heuer brand attached to it as well. But great watches for the money. And I still have mine 9 years later, so it's not going anywhere.
I noticed you wore it recently for a little bit.
Yes, that's right.
It's cool to break him out every now and then.
Absolutely.
And remember back when. Continuing on this topic, how tastes change over time. And it's always something I'm very interested in, because I remember, you know, years ago, I would say things like, I'd never buy a watch without a date because it's so practical. I don't understand these people that can buy watches without a date. I haven't bought a watch with a date now for 4 years. So, you know, that sort of is what happened to me. But how has your tastes changed over time?
Yeah, I think, the whole watch journey is very remarkable in that it's changing, and it's ever changing for everyone. And everybody who gets into this hobby, I think if you ask them a year or two on, their change will have, maybe not changed, but evolved. And that's what happened to me as well. If I look back at some of the watches that I bought, I wouldn't necessarily buy today. I think these days I'm what I wasn't back in the day at all. I'm more interested in like dressier pieces, with, for example, the Lange & Söhne that I bought last year. Wearability is also a big thing. For example, I had the Black Bay, the Tudor Black Bay Steel and Gold, the two-tone Black Bay. And up until I got to wear a Tudor Submariner of the mid to late 90s, I never knew how chunky and big that Black Bay was. So that's definitely something that changed, where I'm more about, okay, how does this thing actually wear? I don't want like a hockey puck kind of situation on my wrists. also leaning more towards independence at the moment. You know, I know both of you are great fans of independent brands as well. It gives you an experience that none of the big brands can give you. So that's definitely something that changed for me. And I've also done like a 360 really on Rolex, but I think we're going to get into that. Maybe,
Hold your fire.
We'll do.
Yeah. Can I just jump in and say, JP's collection, it's incredible. The group of watches that you have at this point, after 9 years being in this deep into this hobby, I mean, I scroll through your Instagram every now and then, not in a creepy way, just to have a look at the caliber of pieces that you do have. And yeah, it's such a well-rounded bunch of watches, and just incredible. Every time I just go, wow, you know, quite amazing. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's so kind. I mean, yeah, just really can't say enough. It's just such a great bunch of watches.
I like the fact as well that, you know, we'll talk about some of your latest additions in a minute, but I like the fact that you are often wearing, or you even turn up to watch meets with your, that steel G-Shock that you've got, because it makes you happy and you enjoy it. No, I think that's really cool as well.
Yeah, Vinny, thank you so much for the kind words. That of really course. Means a lot. Look, I'm not, you know, buying these watches to get like recognition or whatever. It's more about really what makes me happy and what makes me excited when I put it on my wrist in the morning. And I think my collection is a reflection of that and my personality as well. So yeah, it's great to see that, you know, people look at the collection and say, hey, well, that's some really nice pieces there. And to your point, Anthony, I think for me, it doesn't have anything to do with how much a watch really is. It doesn't matter how much I paid for it. It's more about how much enjoyment it gives me. And I'm not saying the G-Shock gives me more or less or the same amount of pleasure than my VC, but it's different, you know. You just want to be able to experience some different pieces, some different brands. And like one day you feel like a G-Shock and the other day you feel like a Lange. So I think that's the variety of things is what I really enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do you have a watch story that you can share with people around how you came to like a watch or how it came to be and ended up in your collection? Is there anything that you can share?
I've got lots of stories, but I think the story that I'm going to tell is not so much the story about a watch, but about the community. I'm not sure if that's sure. okay with you.
Yeah, of course, go.
So the thing is, I met up with a very good friend of mine from Germany in Las Vegas last year. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to meet there and, you know, spend a couple of days together. We hadn't seen each other in a very long time. So a couple of days before I left, I put something on Instagram, like a countdown, whatever, like 3 or 4 more days until flying to Las Vegas. And one of the people I follow, and he follows me too in the US, is Ty Alexander. I'm sure you've seen him on Instagram as well.
Yes.
And he reached out to me. Amazing guy, amazing photos. Amazing collection. And he reached out to me saying, hey, that's so funny, replying to my Instagram story basically and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to be there as well. There's this watch fair. It's just for dealers, but hey, we should hang out and we should grab a beer. I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do that. So we exchanged numbers and I got to Vegas and it was like 2 or 3 days in. And then he texted me saying, hey, you know, been flat out, but we can, you know, I can get you into the Oris party tonight. Do you want to come? I was like, yeah, sure, I want to come. And then so my friend and I went to downtown Las Vegas, and there was this amazing party going on. It was such a cool venue. There was live music, there were cocktails. It was just madness. It was so good. I met obviously Ty there. I met Adam Kraniotis, the founder of Red Bar. Had a really good and long chat to Rolf Studer, who is the CEO of Oris. In German, interestingly. And we had such a good night there and, you know, had a few drinks, obviously. And then, you know, the Oris bear was there as well. And then we dragged him outside at like 1 or 2 in the morning through the strip downtown Las Vegas, taking photos. It was just absolutely insane. And the fact that, you know, I've never met any of these guys and that I can just be welcomed into a group like this in a totally different country, totally different city, and being able to connect with these guys was just astonishing to me, and just showed me again how strong this community is all over the world and how special those people are. So it was really mind-blowing.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I shared a story not too long ago about doing a very similar thing with someone I met in Berlin.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I think what you're talking about there is the essence of the community, that yes, it's about watches, but the watches are just the connection that brings people together.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what you're saying there. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, when we get to travel again, I'll certainly be trying to connect with people wherever I'm going, because there's just such a cool community. And I think we owe that to almost to Instagram for igniting that, because otherwise, I mean, the forums are there and, you know, but this seems to have brought everyone closer together, which is pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Pretty cool. All right. So I think, you know, thank you so much for sort of letting us in a little bit into your collecting and the way that you see your watches. And you know, I mimic what Vinny was saying there around your Instagram as well is just astonishing. And I couldn't believe it took me so long to realize that there was a pattern there. because quite often you're not going to someone's profile. You just see the picture in the feed. And then I don't know, for some reason I must have gone there and I was like, wait a minute, he's doing something here. So if you haven't seen it before, have a look at, and we all know that JP is the king of the pocket shot. So yeah, you're never far from pocket shot with JP. So yeah, go check it out.
Every third shot.
Exactly. Can't be too long. Can't be too far away.
Oh, thanks so much for the kind words. I really appreciate it, Anthony. Thank you.
No worries at all. All right. So let's shift gears a little bit because we wanted to talk about something that's fairly topical at the moment and maybe even more so now. I mean, we had the idea probably before coronavirus came along to have this discussion. But now that coronavirus is here, it's probably more and more so. And I know it made me start to think about what I was going to do with my collection and things like that. So I will hand over to Vinny. He's going to take us through a bit of a discussion. Hopefully we can keep it non-heated, but we'll see how we go, around your BLNR and selling it, and then me with keeping mine, etc. So all yours, Vinny, take it away.
Okay, so basically I'm going to adjudicate here, be the referee between two parties. JP has had the BLNR, the Batman, and Anthony still has it. The difference is, yeah, JP's let go of his pretty recently. I love this watch, but there is a lot of sort of stigma around it. Rolex waitlist, Batman influences. There's a lot of things that probably don't associate, that aren't associated with other watch brands. So in one corner, we have Ant saying, should keep it, JP let go of his. And I want to hand it over to the Pocket Shot King to serve and say why he sold it, why he let it go.
Sure. Thank you. Look, first of all, I want to start by saying it's still a fantastic watch. There's a reason I bought it. There's a reason I've had it for 2 years and that I've loved it and I wore it a lot. And I think there's nothing wrong with the watch, and anybody who has it should be, you know, consider themselves lucky. And I don't have any problem with the watch or with what it comes with. It was just a really personal decision, and hopefully I'm going to talk you through my thought process here a little bit. So yeah, I bought it over 2 years ago when things were relatively normal. I just got to a point within the last couple of months where I'm kind of over Rolex, not just the BLNR, just the brand. It seems to me, you know, being in the forums and the Facebook groups on Instagram, the podcast and everything, it seems to be all everyone ever talks about. And the hype kind of started to a little bit ruin the watch for me. People pay absolutely insane prices these days just to show that they can get them. Case in point, the guy I sold it to was a young chap, maybe, you know, early 20s. He met up with me to do the transaction, and he was wearing an Apple Watch, and I was asking him, look, is this your first watch? He's like, yeah, this is the first, like, not Apple Watch that he had.
Not a bad place to start, I tell you what.
Yeah, absolutely. But then I asked him why he, you know, wanted this one specifically. And he said, well, because it's a Rolex. And that just kind of, you know, reinforced or told me, okay, maybe I was doing the right thing here. The prices, the way that they were or are at the moment is, you know, if you compare it to something like my overseas, that's, it was roughly the same value when I sold it. And I thought, okay, something is wrong here. Something is not right. These two pieces shouldn't be in the same league to me. So I think for me, the BLNR kind of represents a lot of things that are wrong with watch collecting these days. I think there's a lot of people out there that get into the hobby or get into watches not because they like them or they love them, but because for them it's, they can show people that they can get something that no one else can get. It's about getting something that will increase in value. And I, you know, watch collecting, when did it become all about value? I think watch collecting really should be about, you know, pleasure, about enjoyment. If you buy something, if you buy a car or like jewelry or something like that, you wouldn't expect it to go up in value. And I think collectors nowadays, suddenly expect that their watches go up in value. If you want something to go up in value, buy shares, don't buy a watch. I mean, it's kind of insane at this point. I'm not saying don't buy a smart. I absolutely say buy smart. You can buy any watch like pre-owned at a really good price and you won't lose a lot of money no matter what the brand is. But it's just about, you know, buying what you like, I think. I think I always read like about people that say, hey, I'm trying to decide between this Rolex Submariner and, I don't know, the Omega Seamaster Professional 300. I like the Omega better, but, you know, obviously it'll lose more value, so I'm just going to go with the Rolex. And that just breaks my heart. I think those people get those watches for the wrong reason. And for me, it was I was just getting to a point where I didn't want to be part of this whole game anymore. That, you know, I can't say that Rolex is playing the game, but it's just the way things are at the moment. And I'm just, you know, please just buy what you like and give other brands a chance as well. Don't get me wrong, Rolex still makes great watches, and I'm sure I'm gonna buy another Rolex in the future as well. But for now, I've taken a step back and said, okay, I don't want to be part of this whole hype anymore.
Yeah, and I totally agree with the fact that if you look at it, you can trade your Billionaire and hop straight into a Vacheron.
Yeah.
I think as someone who just absolutely loves watches, to say that you can go from a steel GMT into one of the Holy Trinity brands, basically just a swap, or go from a Batman to a Lange, it's a really different ballgame. When you brought that point up, I thought, wow, that's, if I had a Batman, I think that's the first thing I'd be thinking of, going, wow, I could really get into something that's top level watchmaking. When you think about people in the forums or asking, hey, you know, how much money can I make if I just got the call on X Rolex, whatever, Datejust, so I just got the call, I can have this. What's the market value? And it takes away from the enjoyment. Yeah. It becomes a financial instrument.
Exactly. And
why on earth would you worry about investments potential of a watch when you have stocks and funds and all that kind of stuff? So from what I gather, it's more of an external forces pushing you towards selling the Batman rather than falling out of love with it yourself or being bored with it. It's more like the external sort of not community, but just everything together made you go, yeah, well, I don't want to be a part of this anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I shouldn't, like, every time I put the watch on, I felt like, okay, this is the watch, and people who don't even know about watches will see this watch and say, hey, this is the hot watch that, you know, that's very hard to get. And I shouldn't worry about these things, right? I shouldn't worry what other people think, and I don't. But I just got to a point where I just couldn't, basically, I couldn't go ahead and say, okay, this is the watch and this is like the public perception of it. I couldn't like put these things apart anymore.
Couldn't separate the love for the watch with the perception of it. Yeah,
exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, which is tough, which is really tough. So on the other end of the court, I'm going to ask Anth to return serve and why you kept it.
All right. So I'm in the blue corner, all right, because I got the dealer now. okay, so I want to cast your mind back. It's October 2014. I am a 28-year-old, roughly, I think, up around that time. And I'm going through a news agency and I see this magazine. Some of you may know it, called Watch Time. On the front cover of this Watch Time magazine was this Rolex. And it was a black and blue bezeled BLNR GMT Master 2. And I, as soon as I saw it, it was absolute love at first sight. So I went on this quest, traveled around Australia, going to the different ADs that we've got, put my name down on everything. Everyone laughed at me, all that stuff. And this was still happening back in 2014. I basically went from the magazine straight to the shop, tried to buy it, got laughed at, thought, oh, this is a bit strange. But in some ways, that's what made me continue on even harder, was the fact that people were telling me I couldn't get it. And back then, they were $11,300 Aussie dollars, and the secondary value was between 12.5 and 13 grand. So they had just bumped retail and they were sitting about 20% above retail. And so anyway, I continued on with this quest. I got married in 2016. And what I did during that year was I basically gave up and I thought to myself, nah, I'm never going to get this watch. And so I went into Hardy Brothers in Collins Street in Melbourne and I bought a, well, I ended up ordering one. It needed to come from Switzerland, took about 6 weeks, but I bought a 42 mil Super Ocean Heritage Breitling. Blue dial, blue bezel, beautiful watch, fantastic watch. And it basically, I bought that to fill the void. And anyway, a couple of months later, that was the watch I wore on my wedding day. And then we went on our honeymoon and I'd pre-called Singapore airport. They're like, nah, we can't tell you anything. You have to just come in. And then I knew that there were seven ADs in Kuala Lumpur, which was where I was going for my honeymoon. And so what I did, got to Singapore, nothing there. Started the quest. And, you know, my poor wife, this is our honeymoon, and all we're doing is jumping in and out of taxis, going from one shopping mall that has an AD to another one.
Sounds romantic. And,
yeah, it was. Yeah, for me, it was heaven, but for her, not so much. But anyway, she comes into this in a minute too, because we went to six of the ADs, and there was one that was further out at a shopping center called Mid Valley City. And when I went to Pavilion and I was asking and they were laughing and all that kind of stuff, which is a bit sad anyway, but I'd basically nearly put a deposit down on a Datejust, the blue dial, white gold, fluted bezel. You know, it was pretty cool. I knew that it was going to be about $2,000 cheaper once I'd got my tax back and all that kind of stuff. And then we went to the shopping center because my wife wanted to go shopping anyway. So anyway, I couldn't find the AD and I'd sort of given up and we were walking out to get a taxi and I looked out of the corner of my eye and I saw an hourglass. And then I looked again and down the end of the hourglass was the big Rolex window and it almost looks like a Rolex shop, but it's not. It's just connected to the hourglass. And I said to my wife, goes, go on, you might as well. And I said, you know what? I can't even be bothered. I'm not going to do it. And she said, look, you've come this far. Just go and do it. And I thought, all right, whatever, who cares? Anyway, I go in, I look at the desk, the counters. There's nothing in there. I walk up to the guy and I say, hey, have you got a GMT Master 2 BLNR, you know, the blue back dial, bezel? And he goes, actually, I think we've got one. It came in last night and no one's picked it up yet. And well, I nearly fell over. And anyway, I thought something's wrong here. He's going to bring out the black bezel one. Just to annoy me. And maybe he couldn't understand what I meant. I just said GMT Master 2. Anyway, out comes this BLNR. And I nearly fainted, could have cried, because after so many years of searching and being on all these wait lists, it had finally happened. And it didn't happen the way I expected, which was just to walk in and be able to buy one. Anyway, long story short, my credit card declined. And you could imagine the look on my face when my credit card had declined. I told the bank that I was probably going to do something big spending while I was on my honeymoon. Anyway, I rang the bank and they said, that's fine. Put it through again and it will go through anyway. I paid for the watch, took it back, and I was just over the moon. So I know that's long-winded, but that's the sort of the start of what it is. And Vinny knows because I've had many conversations with him when I was going through the motions. But that's where it starts for me. And I paid retail. I got some tax back as well, which was even better. And it was the same price as what it would have been if I bought it here. So I'm torn between two minds here because while I don't really care about the stigma, I don't wear the watch as much as I used to because of the stigma. And that sort of disappoints me every now and then. But I still think it's like a lot of watches where if you don't wear them for a few weeks and then you put it on, you fall in love with it all over again, or you remember why you bought it. And then I always then try and think about that quest of never giving up and that I ended up finding what I wanted. The other things for me are, you know, it's a six-year run, which generally in Rolex terms is pretty small. I think if you look at some of the, not so much the hyped pieces, but the pieces that are really special 20, 30 years later, you know, one owner, box and papers, all that kind of stuff. While that is connected to the hype stuff, it's also connected to the community and what it is all about with watch collecting. Vinny also helped me not sell mine, because I'll be honest, I did go through the motions quite heavily. I had my eyes on a Moser. I'm thinking to myself, okay, I can probably sell this, buy a Moser and bank 10 grand. And, you know, then basically, you know, that's, it's almost what I paid for it. But I thought to myself, no, I'm not going to do it. It's, and the last thing for me before I hand back to Vinny is for the retail price. And you were comparing the price of what the Rolex is selling at now to the VC, and that, you know, there's that distance there between the quality and the brand and all that kind of stuff. When you're buying these things at retail, you will struggle to find a better constructed, accurate and robust watch for that price. And I think the only things that come close would be a couple of those Omegas with the real sort of METAS chronometer certifications and the, you know, one piece steel buckles and things like that. But at the end of the day, the Rolex for the price, if you're buying it at retail, it doesn't get much better than that for construction. So anyway, that was sort of the last part for me. I will admit it was a tough decision to hold on to it, but I'm really glad that I did. So yeah, that's my side.
Awesome. Awesome. And you put it lightly when you said we had conversations. I had a very stern talking to you. I was very direct. I'm not even sure I let you respond or rebut. I just said, you're not selling it. Your poor wife, you drag her around on your honeymoon. Yeah. But I think you really outlined perfectly there. Yes, like some watches, you know, there is a bit of stigma, or they go through a period where they're loved or not loved. And then 30 years later, down the track, you've got full box papers, BLNR. I mean, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And then even beyond that, you might have, you know, next of kin to hand it on to, and they won't even know about Rolex waitlists or all that other stuff that we know about in the community and the frustration that we may or may not go through. They're just going to go, wow, my dad or my uncle or whatever it may be wore this watch. This was his watch and he got it on his honeymoon. And I think the story behind it will forever outweigh any sort of turbulence the market has right now, just because of the story attached to it. So it's hard to pick a winner between you two, because I absolutely see both sides of the argument. I think Alex said it last time with the Explorers. I think you guys are both winners. I'm so glad you've kept yours, Anth. But I'm also really glad for JP, because now he can look at his collection and just absolutely love it. And I'm sure you've replaced the BLNR with something that is just mind-blowingly amazing. And yeah,
I'm sorry I have to do this, but JP, are you missing the hacking seconds at all? Sorry, man.
That's fair. I actually don't. I really don't. It's something I think about sometimes, but then and I think about, okay, why they didn't do that. But then again, I look at the watch and I forget all about it just because it's so beautiful. But just going back to what you just said, Anthony, first of all, I absolutely loved the story about, you know, you getting that BLNR. And I agree with Vinny. Don't ever sell it, because that story that is attached to it is just the most amazing thing you can tell to, you know, your kids and grandkids one day. So please don't sell it. No. I also very much agree with you when you said this is as good as it gets when it comes to, you know, paying retail for it and getting this much watch for your money. I absolutely agree. If you can get this watch at retail, by all means go for it. It doesn't get much better than this. And I also agree with the third thing you said. I decided to sell it because, you know, I wasn't wearing it for like 2 months, and I was trying to, you know, steer myself away from the watch, I guess. And then I said to myself, okay, I've made my decision, I'm going to sell it. And then I made a mistake, because I decided to wear it. Yes, exactly. And I was going to the Australian Open, to the tennis, and, you know, it was all Rolex, and I just wanted to be the guy who wore Rolex, stupid, whatever. So I just put it on.
There's part in all of us, JP.
Yeah, exactly. And I went to, you know, I was watching the tennis, it was a beautiful summer day, and I glanced down at my wrist, and I said, oh, God damn it. maybe that's a bad idea. So yeah, as soon as I got home, I put it off my wrist and said, nope, you made your decision, you made your bed, this is what you want to do, so go through with it. And I don't miss the watch. I think for me, I made the right decision, but again, it's very much personal preference. And if I had the story attached to this watch that you, Anthony, had, it wouldn't have even crossed my mind to sell it. I know it's tempting, but I'm very glad you kept it, and it's still a phenomenal watch, and good on you for keeping it.
Yeah, no, thank you. And this is a really interesting conversation, because both of us can go to both sides, and I know myself. So while you're saying that you hadn't worn it and then you'd made the decision, then you put it back on and thought, oh crap, what am I doing? Mm. I did the opposite. I made the decision, right, I'm going to keep it. Then I put it on one day and I was like, oh, I could sell this. Like I could bank the money, get another watch that I really like, and I could be quite happy. But it's funny how this sort of stuff goes up and down all the time. And you know, I know you're glad with your decision. I'm happy with my decision. So yeah, you know, it's just, I think what drove you to sell and what drove me to keep it were the right reasons.
Absolutely.
And that's what's important.
Anthony, if you don't mind me asking, do you think this is going to be a keeper for life, or is that a statement you wouldn't want to make?
No, I think if I was ever going to sell it, the only way that this watch gets sold is if there's some sort of financial hardship.
Right.
And that I have to do it because I need to put food on the table for my family and stuff like that. For me, then, at that point in time, it's a no-brainer. Hopefully, that doesn't happen. So I think if I was ever going to sell it, I would have sold it probably around the same time. And I really got close to that couple of days after you. And you had said to me there were two other people that were interested that would have bought it probably on the same day. Mm-hmm. So that comment you made me really ramp it up, and I thought I'll sleep on it. So yeah, I think if I was ever going to sell it, I would have sold it around that sort of February, early March this year. The fact that I've kept it now, and I think where I've made the decision to keep it is because I've already planned the savings plan to get the next watch and be able to keep this one as well. And that's probably where I'll be able to, in time, with the right amount of patience and discipline and savings goal, I'll be able to get that Moser and have the Batman. And that, you know, for me, that's going to be important. But, you know, that doesn't come with hard work and being really disciplined about how I'm spending my money so that I can reach that goal. So, yeah, but I don't think I will now.
Awesome. Good to hear.
And now I can sleep easy at night.
All right. Thank you so much for that, JP. That was a lot of fun. And Vinny, thank you for adjudicating that. I agree. We're both winners. So yeah, let's start to wrap this one up. So I'll go over to Vinny for a favorite review from the Fifth Wrist website.
Awesome. So one of the blokes in our Instagram chat, his handle is RAC63L. Recently wrote a review about a Grand Seiko GMT Mount Iwate dial, and it's the blue Mount Iwate dial. I thought it was a really just well-rounded review. I love that watch. It is absolutely stunning. And to see these pieces that don't get a lot of recognition via marketing, because Seiko is Seiko, and just to have a really nice review of it, really enjoyed it. Great guy as well. So yeah, that was my review of the week.
What's the, which one is this one?
So blue Mount Iwate dial, it's like a sunburst pattern. If you imagine it was the sunburst of feathers, it's unbelievable. It looks mesmeric. And limited edition too. So probably really hard to get a hold of one at the moment.
Yeah, well, this is the story of a lot of watches, isn't it, really?
The good ones, it seems.
Cool. Thank you very much for that. Let's go to some Instagram. So some people to follow. As some listeners know that when they listen to our podcast, we like to continue to grow the community. So we want to, you know, shout out to people that you should go follow after listening. So we'll go with our real guest, JP. So who do you recommend people go and follow, and a little bit about that, you know, why they should?
Yeah, sure. So I mentioned him actually in my Las Vegas story. It's Ty. Ty Alexander. His Insta handle is at Ty Alexander Photography, all one word. He's not only an amazing guy, his photography skills are off the charts. It's just he's a professional photographer, and you can tell, but he's so passionate about watches. Talking to him in person and on Instagram as well just made me realize what kind of guy he is, and how much he loves watches. Some of the watches you'll see on his feed are his. Others he gets sent to take photos of. And yeah, it's just next level. The lighting is always on point. It's always razor sharp. And he's also a really, really cool guy. So if you want to have a good chat to a really cool bloke over in the US, check out Ty.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Beautiful. Vinny, what about you?
Yeah, just Ty's photography, just to support your point. Sure. Unbelievable. Let's... yeah, really next level. For my follow of the week is also another person who's in our Melbourne Watch community. Not really most out there extravagant on Instagram, but one of the most humble and passionate guys I know. Tony, his handle is Aquanaut with two T's at the end. Insane collection, but really down-to-earth guy. Just loves his watches and always happy to talk about them. So that is my Go Follow of the Week.
Great choice. He's a great guy, and he has an amazing collection. Could not agree more.
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely, lovely chap. And mine is someone who I went searching for in the people that sort of follow me and that I follow as well. And one of them was Spring Driven. So SpringDriven, just one word, Spring Driven. He's a watch collector from the UK. What I like is he's a fellow iPhone photographer like yours truly, speaking to two experts on here. But for me, I like, point, shoot, and, do some fancy editing that I've got no idea what I'm doing, but just make sure that structure's all the way up. So, yeah, anyway.
We love a good iPhone shoot.
Absolutely. But Spring Driven, he has some exceptional watches, and what I like is he's got things from Dornbluth and Sons. Actually, that reminds me, JP, we'll get you to pronounce some of the German watch brands for us.
Sure.
To Rolex, to he's got one of those Smiths. I think it's a PRS32 Vanguard, which is the sort of Paul Newman homage watch from back in the day. But yeah, really cool collection of very different watches from one end of the scale to the other. So definitely worth going to have a follow for him as well. So before we wrap up, we'll do that very quickly, is can you give us maybe three or four of the German pronunciations? Because I noticed before that you said Wempe when you went into New York.
That's right.
Now, is that correct, or is that the Australian version?
No, actually, Wempe is a German brand, German retailer, and that's how you pronounce it, Wempe.
Wempe. Okay, cool. So what about A. Langen's son? <That's>,
No, you're getting really close, actually. It's A. Lange und Söhne.
Oh, that's very nice. Yeah. And what about Glashütte Original?
So it's a town basically in Saxony, as you all know. It's Glashütte. Glashütte Original is how we would pronounce it in Germany. But you're getting really close.
Everyone thinks that Tim Mosso is crazy when he sits there going Glashütte Original. But
no, his
accent is correct. His accent is incorrect. But sorry?
Is Tim Mosso ever going to be wrong?
Exactly. Oh, about him.
Another one, actually, Stova. You have one of those.
Stova.
Stova. Yeah. So ST not, basically.
Not Stowa.
Because if you have an ST in German, it basically is pronounced as SHT, right? So it's a sound, and it means Stova.
Stova. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about Mühle?
Mühle.
Mühle.
Mühle. Okay. Mühle Glashütte. So the UE sound gets made into like an Ü sound,
yeah.
An umlaut, and it's Mühle Glashütte. So the same as in Glashütte, the UE is the same sound as you have in Mühle. Mühle Glashütte.
Vinny, have you got any? Is there anything you want to know?
Is it Sin or Zin?
Zin.
There we go.
And there's Damasco and Junghans, who are really, you know, self-explanatory. Meistersinger as well. But I think those are the main ones, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was trying to think of the other one that... Oh, no.
German Watch Brands?
Yeah, it's something NC. Is it... they're new. Well, not new. Henschel? Interesting. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Look at that. We're getting education while we're talking about watches as well. So thank you, JP. Now, before we go, I just want to quickly introduce part two so that people jump over and listen to that one as well. We have something planned that was extremely difficult to do. But what we're doing is a bit of a challenge. The challenge was set to the gents to they had $50,000 Australian to spend, and they could only come up with one watch. And they had to get rid of their whole collection, and they could only ever wear this one watch for the rest of their life. So very difficult to do, but it's going to be a very interesting conversation as to why people have selected those certain watches. So be sure to check out part two when you finish listening to this one. We'll start to wrap up. So thank you so much, JP, for coming on today and for hanging around for part two as well. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Before we go, I just want to, you know, make a big shout out to you guys. I've been a listener of Fifth Wrist Radio ever since episode one. I can't tell you how much I appreciate all the work you're doing. So everybody who works on Fifth Wrist, but especially like you two, obviously, and Rob and Alex as well. It's always a pleasure to listen to your podcast. I think you always, you know, take on feedback as well. I'm always excited to listen to a new episode, and I'm honored to be a guest. So just keep on doing what you're doing, because I really appreciate it and I love what you guys are doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And speaking of Fifth Wrist, if you want to review one of your watches, we'd love to get you to review a watch, and we can put it up on the website. We're keen to get people's honest opinions of the watches that they wear. So head over to Fifth Wrist, check out some reviews, and then make sure you don't do what I did and just get really scared about writing because you're not a writer. you know, it's all about how you want to talk about your watch. So yeah, don't be shy. Say what you want. And just be honest. So, all right, gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again very soon in part two. It is Easter Sunday today, so I hope everyone's having a good day. Stay safe, stay home, and stay on time.